from the corner. Yes! And a foul!
Is he having himself an afternoon? Schweiger feeling
his third three already.
On the drive goes Patty Casey for the basket.
Backdoor cut, Schweiger with the jam. This is Schweiger in close and one.
Welcome to episode two of the Schweiger Show. I thought after a very successful episode one, Patty, what do you think about episode one?
I feel like a seasoned vet now, honestly, having one under our belt. But no, seriously, I think we got to, first of all, thank Adam and Jake for making it sound super good.
Big time.
Like I said in the first episode, very miniature microphone. We definitely sound a little bit more professional than I anticipated, which was a very pleasant surprise. So thanks to those two for that.
Yeah, obviously, last episode we went through just some of the things that I've gone through in this past couple of time. We went over Patty, and I think he's just kind of funny. You know what I mean? We finally got out of the group chat. We talked about definitely. Jim a little bit, how Jim is going to be a part of it, and I'm just excited. I'm excited for where it's going, and just some of the stats from this last week is crazy. I mean, one of our producers, Jake Sheridan. Is going to start doing the stat of the week. So Jake, let's hear the stats of the week real quick.
Sheridan's stat of the week.
All right. So, yeah, I guess I'm the stat of the week guy now. I figured that one out about 10 minutes ago. Thanks, guys. Got to, really prepare for this. But going off last week's episode, our stat of the week is that on day one, we debuted at number 205 in basketball category on Apple Podcasts. And then we ended up peaking at number 14 in basketball podcasts for the United States. So
wow,
USA's unbelievable. I'm hoping we can branch out more, get bigger in those other countries.
Definitely.
Well, I mean, that
I will say my feedback that, sorry to cut you off, the feedback that I got individually was everyone loved it. That might have been a little bit biased because it was mostly my very close friends and my family, but yeah, I thought we did a good job. It was pretty funny. People tuned in to just hear us spew back and forth, but I thought it went great.
Yeah, no, for sure. I just like to thank all the listeners for tuning in. Obviously, all the people who, Lakers fans, Syracuse fans, people from Scranton, our families. Yep. I mean, I think it was just a big success. And like I said, we're super excited to keep on going along with this podcast. But
I think I gotta thank you too. I mean, the episode was 50 minutes of you, so the fact that it did well means people are interested in your life. So thank you, Schweiger.
Yeah, I think this section of the podcast will just be probably just talking about our last week and everything like that. Patty, how was your last week?
It was solid. Work went well. Notre Dame won, which was good. The Eagles are playing currently, which I think they're up 7-0 right now. We record on Monday, so this is Monday Night Football. I just went on record saying they're the best team in the NFC, but my week was good. How was your week?
Yeah, my week was good, man. Just another week in the gym, another week just getting ready for training camp and everything going forward. Like I said, I mean, it's one of those things where you got to take it one day at a time and not try and rush things. You know, I mean, everyone's excited for the way this kind of preseasons went from summer league to kind of moving forward. But I mean, just another week in the gym, another week just getting ready and just looking forward to this weekend and kind of just getting with the team.
Yeah. Are you getting settled in out there in LA? Like, do you feel like an LA guy now, or are you still an East Coast boy at heart?
Definitely East Coast guy at heart, but I mean, LA's been great. I mean, it's such a different type of culture, and it's one of those things you kind of get used to over time. But I've had a couple of people come out here and visit me, and it's been fun, man. It's been fun for sure.
Yeah, I'll be there at some point. But kind of in line with that question, we wanted to thank the people who reached out to the Gmail, submitted some questions. We got a handful this past week. Like we said in all of our Instagram captions, all of our tweets, and like I said like three times on the last episode, make sure you follow us on all platforms, Instagram, Twitter, at Schweiger Show, and our Gmail is schweigershow@gmail. But sort of similar to the question I just asked, we had a question from Roger, who we really appreciated. Sheridan has his stat of the week. I think we're going to give our other producer, Adam Lewis, the duty of asking the mailbag question of the week weekly. So, Adam, take it away.
All right. So the first ever mailbag question on the Cole Schweiger Show is a great one from Roger. He asks, what's it like to be playing for the Lakers, even though you grew up in New England? Does it feel weird to be viewed as an opponent of Boston sports? I thought that was a good question.
That's a great question.
Very good question from Roger.
Yeah, Roger's an educated guy.
Yeah.
but yeah, no, I mean, especially growing up my whole entire life being a Boston sports fan, it's definitely weird being a Laker. But at the end of the day, it's just amazing to be a part of such a great franchise, great organization. Right. I would argue the Celtics, Knicks, and Lakers are the three top organizations in terms of notoriety in the NBA. Absolutely. So being a part of one of those three teams, and obviously all the publicity you get from playing with LeBron and everything like that, it does feel weird. You know what I mean? My dad grew up a Celtics fan. My grandfather would probably be rolling over his grave right now if he knew I was a part of the Lakers. But maybe of excitement too. But yeah. It's just one of those things where it does feel a little weird because you grow up cheering for KG, Paul Pierce, and Ray Allen. But at the same time, I'm so thankful and blessed to be part of the Lakers. And my parents will gladly put on Lakers gear now.
Yeah, so. I was going to say, it goes without saying, like, you could switch colors pretty quick for the situation you're in. So,
I remember Pat Connaughton this year during the playoffs. He talked about how he grew up in Boston his whole life. And they asked him, would you ever imagine yourself hitting the game-winning free throws against Boston and kind of shutting that out? He's like, man, I mean, you grow up dreaming to play the Celtics, but it's almost sweeter kind of to do it to them. You know what I mean?
But kind of in line with that, I think it's sort of a good segue, I guess, to our inaugural guest of the Swider Show, who we just finished up an interview with, Buddy. It's about an hour long. We chop it up and stuff. It might be a little bit shorter, but he had a workout to get to. Honestly, Swider, I felt like we could have gone for 3 or 4 hours.
Oh, it was unbelievable. I think Buddy's obviously an amazing guy, extremely hard worker. He's worked for everything he got, and he kind of just got into that story a little bit, being obviously Coach Boeheim's son and a Hall of Fame coach. In my opinion, a top five college basketball coach of all time. Just him being his son, and
I think that's just a fact.
Yeah, no, for sure. Yeah. And I think just what Buddy's kind of gone through may have not been something that was particularly a hard life, but a hard basketball life for sure. You know what I mean? And Buddy definitely prevailed through those times, and obviously he's in the NBA now killing it with Detroit. Yeah. So it was great to have him on and kind of just go through some stories of this past year and just kind of start off our podcast with Buddy.
Yeah, I think it was a perfect first guest, honestly. Yeah, like you said, he gets in everything, really. Like, kind of start from the beginning of his life, work through his basketball journey, and anyone, you mentioned it in the interview, but anyone who's met Buddy knows he's like the nicest, goofiest, most laid back guy. So I think that kind of comes through in the interview. It went really well. So
yeah, like I said, nicest guy in the world. And I think we're just gonna kind of segue this right into the interview. So thank you guys for tuning in for this episode, and we can't wait for you guys to hear this interview with Buddy. So here we go. Welcome buddy to the Swider Show. Really appreciate you coming on. Obviously, me, you, and Patty had a really close relationship last year, so thanks for coming on and being our first guest.
Yeah, of course, guys. It's an honor. Obviously, you guys are my guys for sure. Getting really close last year. Only spent 1 year together, but you know that bond will be forever for sure. So thanks for having me.
Yeah, of course. I feel like we're kind of figuring out the inaugural guest here. Obviously, I interviewed Swider last week, but that doesn't count as a guest because it is the Cole Swider Show. So I feel like this is the perfect direction to go in. A lot to talk about, a lot to get into. Try not to keep it too formal, as I'm sure a lot of listeners can know. It's sort of an awkward thing, Swider, like interviewing your friend, you know what I mean? Like sitting down and being like, okay, so like tell me about this point in your life. So yeah, it should be fun. Excited to get going here. And yeah, again, thanks for coming.
Yeah, no, it's funny. I mean, obviously, all of us only spent 1 year together, but I feel like the year was obviously a lot of ups and downs and everything like that. But we created like a real brotherhood in that 1 year. And one thing that I talked to Patty about last week is like, I think one of the things that we connected so quickly on was just our work ethic. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
We all got in the gym. We all did those extra things. And first thing I want to ask you, bud, is like, where do you kind of get that from? You know what I mean? Because you came from a household where it was like, all right, like you didn't have to work for everything you got, but where do you get that from?
Yeah, man, I think I just had it ever since I was young, really. I just love to work hard. I love seeing the results. I think I just love being in the gym right away. I think I like that more than playing in games at first, just like being in the gym, grinding, getting, you know, having a couple friends to go work out with. And I kind of just fell in love with that right away. And then, you know, working out at the practice facility at the Mello Center and working with Cabillas and G-Mac a little and Eric Devendorf when I was in sixth, seventh grade, I just started to fall in love with it even more. And yeah, then getting to college, obviously just kept going. And, you know, you two, you and Patty are also, you know, two of the hardest workers I've seen. You specifically, Cole, obviously shows, but
whoa.
You ready? I'm kidding. Patty, it's show for you too.
I'm kidding.
Patty, you too for sure. I mean, obviously, you know, I think top five walk on ever, if not, you know, top.
Yeah, no, we'll get into that.
We'll get into that for sure. But
no, I'm just kidding. Obviously, you guys put me to shame in the work ethic and the skills category. But real quick, obviously, I mean, with having you on the show, everyone in Syracuse has known you your entire life. You've grown up with Syracuse. You're like, obviously, I mean, the Boeheims are Syracuse in a lot of ways. Talk about your work ethic growing up. Jimmy has gotten so much love on this podcast already. We're going to ask you a question right off the bat. I feel like a very relatable thing for siblings growing up, especially you guys are a year apart, is playing one-on-one, being super competitive. Do you have one, like, hilarious or funny story where you can point to where it's like, this is where, like, maybe it was the first time you beat Jimmy. It's the time you guys fought. I'm sure that happened a lot.
Oh, my gosh, like yeah. I mean, oh, my, yeah, that's probably also where I got my work ethic.
Yeah, exactly.
You guys know Jimmy, and you know he's, like my dad, he's probably the most stubborn person you'll ever meet, and he won't, you know, he won't give you anything. He's not going to let you win anything, and as a kid especially, it was worse than ever, and we would have my dad ref our games on a little tight soup, and we would get into a shoving match every time. It just turned into tackling or fighting. We'd yell at my dad and stuff. And then I remember one time he beat me, and he was going to pick up the ball by the window outside, and it was like kind of broken already, and I just pushed him out the window, like glass fell on him, like just right out the window. I was done with him. And
oh my god,
we had a playroom and it had a couple holes in the wall, stuff like that. But you know, I'm surprised it never, nothing had to go to the hospital ever. But it was pretty serious. And yeah, my parents would have to break it up every time, and it got to the point where we just stopped playing, honestly.
Yeah,
we got definitely too bad. And you know, even if we play video games or anything, we can't do that anymore, because it turns into a fight, and we won't talk to each other for a week.
Yeah,
I mean that's typical Jim. That's typical Jim. Oh,
yeah, exactly. Yeah,
I'm sure he handled that well.
I remember beating him growing up, and he would cheat to make it so I couldn't win. Like, game was 11, I got 11. It was win by three, you know, win by four or something, the new rule. And we'd keep playing, we're going to 15, and he would win some. He would win, and then he'd stop, and he'd be like, all right. And that's exactly how my dad was. He would play a board game, and if I beat him, we'd have to play again until he won the series. Or if I beat him in ping pong, we wouldn't play again. I don't think we've played in 10 years since the last time I beat him.
I mean, you gotta be like that, though. I have both roles as the little sibling and older sibling. When you're the older sibling, it's like, I'm not losing this game. Like, you just gotta figure out an excuse or just keep playing until you win.
Yeah, no, I learned that the hard way over and over again. But I mean, he would beat me in one-on-one, and I would stay downstairs, and I would stay in the gym for another hour and say, all right, he's resting now, he's satisfied, but I'm gonna catch him one day, and you know, we'll see what happens. But he, you know, he really motivated me a lot as a kid, and I thank him for that, because it definitely helped.
Right, definitely helps your growth.
But screw Jimmy.
So buddy, talk about how a little bit, like, going from middle school to high school, like, obviously that decision, the decision to go to JD, and then after that, just kind of going from there, and just how you got better over the years.
Yeah, I mean, it was a process for me. I mean, growing up, I was never the best player, never really, you know, I had a ways to go, and I think I knew that early on. You know, playing seventh and eighth grade, I played with a local team. We had, you know, five or six Division I players, Charles Pride, Mike Adams Woods, a couple other guys that were pretty
good. Samir.
Samir was one, a year younger, but he was playing with us. We had a good area for players and talent, and I wasn't quite there yet. I knew it was going to be a while, but a process. So, I mean, really just, you know, over the years, I came off the bench on my AU teams. And then, you know, once I got to high school, I started getting better, started working out with the team. I would go, you know, at 6 a.m. and work out with GMAC and Frank and Tyus and, you know, work out with Cabillas after for an hour. And then Eric, you know, I was working as hard as I could. And I wasn't too worried about where I was at. I said, you know, if it, hopefully it will work out and we'll see. Didn't really, you know, have any plans or goals at the time. But, you know, my dad just said, work hard and you'll be a good player one day. And that's really all he ever had to tell me. And I said, all right, we'll see. We'll see what that advice can get me. And then really my sophomore to junior year in high school, I really took a big leap and, you know, got player of the year in the area for my high school team. Went to, you know, Final Four for states. And then that summer, I really took a leap. I went from, you know, playing 5 minutes a game on the Nike circuit with the Albany City Rocks to starting and, you know, averaged 13, 14 a game at Peach Jam, shooting, you know, 40-50% from three that year. And, you know, just coaches coming up to my dad saying, you know, you got to take him or he can play at a high level. He can play at Syracuse. And, you know, those were some pretty cool conversations, pretty cool moments, because it did take 5 or 6 years of hard work to really get to, you know, a guy that was a good player and could play somewhere and play at Syracuse, most importantly. So I never really envisioned myself playing at Syracuse growing up, but I just, you know, worked hard. I felt, like you said, I fell in love with it, and I wasn't too stressed about, you know, where I was going to be at in a month or 2 months, 3 months. I said, all right, we'll take it year by year. So, you know, every summer I would grind and really take advantage of the summers. And then that next season, I would kind of show a growth and leap each year. But it was definitely a process, a long one, but I wouldn't trade it for anything. You know, it showed me that, you know, patience and hard work, it can, you know, get you just about anywhere. And it was a fun little journey going through high school and getting to this point.
So your freshman year, you were on JV, right, at JD?
Yep.
We've talked about this story a couple of times, but tell us about the story about you're in the state playoffs as a freshman. You're sitting on the bench of varsity, and then your coach just randomly throws you in the game in the state playoffs. Tell us
about that. Yeah, it was actually like a big playoff game. You know, I just got moved up it was probably my first week, second week up on the varsity team. They moved up two guys. They would do it every year and stuff, like be around the older guys and kind of just be there, you know, and be around the team and learn, get ready for the next year. And it was this, you know, I hadn't played yet. I wasn't playing much. I wasn't expecting to play. I just kind of had, you know, it was cool being there and being with my brother who was there at the time. And, you know, we had a pretty good team. Little Adrian Autry was on the team, and we're playing, and it's probably like we're down 2 or 3 in the first half. And I think we're playing a team, Cortland, and they throw a zone at us. And for some reason, there's probably like a minute left in the first half. And, you know, our coach goes to the end of the bench, or I hear, you know, three coaches yell down, buddy, and like, it has to relay about to 8 other guys because I'm in the last seat on the bench, like 12 guys down. And, you know, I remember the guys next to me are like, buddy, like, do they mean me? And like, I'm like, all right.
Are you sure? Yeah.
Yeah. I stand up, look at the coach. He's like, come on. And, you know, the student section goes crazy. Everyone's like, yeah, like, let's go. And I was like, this is wild. And I get in the game and, you know, get a swing pass and pass it back and get up and down a couple of times and come out. But yeah, that was my first moment really in a high school game. And it was one of the crazier things. I think, you know, after that, I was like, all right, this is.
Did you get one up or not?
Didn't get one up. No.
Oh, wow.
I got a look.
That's a bit shocking, if I'm being honest.
It is now, but I probably would have airballed.
When you're a freshman,
I think my hands were sweating. I didn't even look at the rim. I was just, you know, quick swing, give it back, and get comfortable, look good, and then, you know, sub out.
I remember my first high school game at my public school. We were playing, like, our rival team. It was, literally an injury fun game. And I got it the first time. I shot it, and it went over the rim. Like air ball. It was like this 6'4" kid on there just threw it up there, air ball.
Right. That's exactly that's what would have happened. I was like, please, like, I'm not doing this. Like, that, I hated that, especially as a freshman in high school. I was like, no way.
Yeah. I was just worrying about warm ups when I was a freshman in high school on
varsity. Right. But
but I mean, you kind of touched on this, but I feel like a question you probably get a lot is the conversation you had with your dad when he actually offered you the scholarship. So, like, was that just you guys were at your house and he's like, so, bud, like, do you want to play for me? Or was it a more formal thing?
That was, like, the craziest thing ever because, like, it happened and then, like, you know, 10, 30 minutes later, I was like, wait, did he just, like, ask me, like, off
yeah.
to, like, that? So, like,
yeah. He, like, texted
me. Do I tweet this? Do I tweet this?
It was so, like, it was so ham if you know him. He's just so subtle and
he's
not going to, like, you know, he's just going to keep it short and you're going to be like, all right, he could mean this or that. Like, I'm not sure. He's very straightforward though. And this was, you know, so I think Red at first, he offered me at an open gym. He was just like, you know, I think it was after Gonzaga offered me or something. He's like, so are you going to Gonzaga or here? And I'm like, like, I don't have, I was like, do y'all want me to come here? Like, I don't know. He's like, yes, you have an offer. Like, he said that like I should already know that, so I was like, okay. And then,
buddy,
like,
are you kidding me?
Yeah. A week or two later, we're actually going. My dad's driving me. I think we're going to Mello that day, work out or go to practice. And he's like, you know, so what are you thinking? Like, do you want to come play at Syracuse? And I was like, I don't know. If you insist,
yeah.
You want, like, yeah, if that's okay. And he's like, yeah we can, what, well, yeah, for sure. I was like, he really just said like, yeah, of course, and then like kept driving, and that was it. Like, that was it. But he, you know, he was happy about it because the assistants went to him at, you know, during that summer, and we were like, you know, we want Buddy, we think he can come help us.
Yeah,
you know, my dad was most thrilled about that he didn't, that, you know,
right,
push it on anyone, and they noticed that, and that meant a lot to me, and they wanted me to take an official visit and do all that stuff, so that was cool. But and it was the most Jim Boeheim offer ever for to me. It was, you know, you gonna come play here or what? Like,
yeah, I couldn't see it going anywhere.
Yeah, sure,
people are so curious about it.
About a 1 minute conversation.
That's hilarious. Oh, you're like torn Mello on your official visit? It's like, yeah, I've been here a million times.
Yeah, no, I'm in Red's office. I'm in my dad's office. And, you know, I had no expectations for what I was getting into, but, you know, it was a great 4 years, and, you know, it was greatest 4 years of my life.
Yeah.
Hey, let's go back. What went into your decision not to reclass at Brewster going into that last year? Because obviously, guys in the North, your brother did a PG year. I reclassed in high school. What went into that decision? Was that just like a, like, talk about that?
Yeah. I think honestly, if I did another year of public school, I would have did another year of, you know, I probably would have went to Brewster then the next year. But my dad just felt like I was, you know, I was ready. I was going to get a great year at Brewster. I was going to play against, you know, 6 or 7, 8 Division I players every day. And just getting that experience really helped me, I think, get ready for college, because, you know, playing in, you know, public school and you're not playing against a lot of guys, it's not going to help as much than playing against these guys every day. So he kind of felt, okay, you know, I need this still, and it's going to help me. And what I was able to do that summer, I think, really helped and showed that I can play against, you know, with the top guys. I'm an elite shooter, and that's what, you know, they needed. And I think that year helped a lot, and just being around the guys. I mean, I was working out with them for the last 2 years, so I was playing pickup, I was in the weight room with them, on the court with them, so they kind of knew that, you know, I had already kind of showed moments here and there that I could play and could help out them, help out the team, and, you know, that kind of went into that. But I think if I did another year of public school, I would have thought about it more. But that year at Brewster really helped just get me ready for college and help me as much as possible for that.
Because I think, honestly, I mean, you probably would have been ranked the top 100 player if you were to do another year. You know what I mean? I mean, obviously, it worked out great.
Right.
It worked out great. But, I mean, that just would have been my thought of, like, all right, like, let's see. But, no, but obviously, you're a hard worker. Obviously, you did all the right things. And you were able to play as a freshman at Syracuse, too. So it's not like you took a step back in anything.
Right, yeah. Yeah, I mean, those rankings, you know, my dad would always say, you know, I should be. I think after Pete Sham, too, I think I was honorable mention and had a great summer. You know, I mean, I think I was 349th. I think I could have been a little better than that. And, you know, I think that would have.
I think I might have been ahead of you.
Patty, you probably were right up. You probably up there. But up.
No, I don't know. I don't even know if I had any stars, but.
I think they just gave me it when I committed to Syracuse. They just gave me 3 stars.
Yeah, they're like, oh, we got to throw some at this kid, yeah.
Yeah, they can't have me getting 0 stars. But, yeah, I mean, it worked out, and I've always been kind of an underdog, and I think that helped me, if anything, just have a chip on my shoulder. I mean, you know, scouts were saying I was a mid-major player even when I was at Brewster and, you know, when I play at Syracuse and this and that. So, you know, that stuff has always motivated me, and it's kind of how it's been for me my whole life, just – especially with who I am, having a target on my back since I was in 5th, 6th grade with, you know, my dad from every game. And, you know, everyone expected me to be some great player, and I wasn't yet and had a ways to go. And just kind of dealing with that ever since then, I've, you know, that's always been one of my biggest motivators too.
Yep. I remember those days playing, you guys would play JB Hoops. And
yeah.
Didn't always go too well for you guys, but then we hit about 8th grade. We hit about 8th grade, and then you guys, I think, took a step up, so.
I think that was more Jimmy than me, Patty. I don't think I ever lost.
Yeah, well, he would have been my grade, but, yeah, whichever one of you guys we were facing, we were making light work of you guys, so it was fun.
That was Jimmy for sure. I don't think my team would have not. My team would never let that happen. A bunch of grand guys running around shooting threes.
Hey, we were high-level players in, like, 5th grade. River Front Sports, we were unbelievable.
Smart players, high IQ, play hard.
Yep. I mean, Swider mentioned your freshman year, you ended up playing a lot. You had a lot of success, especially second half of the year. But like you said, like growing up with your last name in the area, it's like you had kind of a target on your back, and you're playing in front of all these same people. You've been around the program, been to thousands of games as a ball boy. But then all of a sudden, like, you're in it. Like, you're on the team. So I'm sure that was super surreal. It's like, okay, I've grown up looking up to this, and now it's like, I can't look up to this anymore. This is my reality. I'm on the team. Like, you have to contribute. So my first thing is, I want you to tell a story of your first game at MSG and what happened with your jersey. And then more so go into actually, you know, your role and kind of like settle into actually being a Syracuse player.
Yeah, yeah. Man. Woo! Yeah, I mean, like you said, I mean, just going there, being, I think, I never really, you know, I had those moments here and there where I was like, all right, you know, with all the pressure and expectations. But when I got to Syracuse and I really was on the court and stuff, I was like, damn, like, you know, it's a lot. There's so many.
It's real life, yeah. Lots,
you know, Syracuse basketball and, you know, the fans, they're passionate, and I love that. And, you know, as a young kid, though, it was a lot of getting used to. And, you know, you were out there, you had to be confident, and I was going to play. And early on, I really struggled. I wasn't quite ready for the speed, and just, you know, being out there was kind of weird. It was just like, all right, like, this doesn't feel like I'd see my mom in the stands and where I'd sit every game for 15 years. And now I'm playing in front of 15, 20,000 people, and they all know me and watch me grow up. And I think I just tried to, you know, I tried to make every shot. I wanted to be a perfect player out there, and I just wasn't close to that yet. I had a ways to go. And so that kind of, you know, messed with me a little. And then, you know, I had to start the first 2 games because Jalen Carey and Frank Howard were.
Right.
So,
yeah.
You know, I think I was like, I went like 2 for 20 in my first 2 games. And I was like, all right, you know, it's only going to get better from here now. You know, that's not as bad of a start you could have. But,
Patty, that'll give you hope for men's league. That'll give you hope for men's league, Patty.
Yeah, that's Patty. Yeah, Patty, we can talk about that in a little. But,
no, we don't have to get into that. I mean, it's really not important.
We won those games. We didn't lose by 40, at least. That's all I got to say. Wow.
Listen, the depth perception in these small gyms is tough now. You know what I mean? Like, I'm used to the dome now.
It does. There's no harder gym to play in than the dome, and then you get to any other gym now. But, yeah, so we go to New York City after that, and we're playing UConn, and you know, I'm not starting. Jalen's back and he's starting and stuff. So I'm like, all right, you know, I'll be ready. Obviously, confidence is a little down, but, you know, then, so I don't even realize that my name's spelled wrong. I'm like, because every game, I check every game after that, but every game you have your jersey facing you when you walk into the locker room, you know, 10, 15 minutes before a game, you take it off that way, put it on. So, you know, I'm kind of like shocked. I didn't realize like that it was spelled wrong because it looked really bad, like compared to what it usually does without the E, it looked crazy. So like, I can't believe I didn't realize that. And
That's not something you like look for though. It's not like you're like, oh, am I gonna see if my yeah.
Right. Like if so Todd Blumen doesn't notice it, or one of the coaches, like if Todd doesn't notice it, then you know, not no one else is gonna notice it.
Yeah.
So I put it on and I'm wearing it and I play in the first half a little. I think I get to the free throw line, make one out of two, put like 5 minutes and I come out and no, like still no one tells me.
No one says anything.
Been on the bench. I have my jersey on still and then go back in the locker room and I come back out and we're in warmups and you know, then someone's like is your name, like I have my warm-up shirt on too. I think Shorrell's our equipment guy said wear your warm-up. He said put it on because I had my jersey on still and
yeah,
when I said put your warm-up on, I'm like okay, like
yeah, well yeah,
go back out there and I'm like yo, is something wrong with my jersey? And like I think Adrian Adrian Jr.
yeah, Adrian Audrey,
your
yeah.
name spelled wrong, like, and I'm like you're
kidding. No way.
We're at MSG, Syracuse, UConn. Out of every player, my name is spelled wrong. Like, we lose the game. We're in the locker room. Our equipment manager, love Danny Schwartz. Shout out Danny, but
yeah, we're not trying to throw Schwartz under the bus here. It's just a hilarious. It's a hilarious story.
This is on Nike. They, you know, they.
Yeah, exactly.
Two jerseys both spelled wrong, and Schwartz is all worried that he's gonna get fired. Like coming up to me, I'm so sorry. You know, I'm like, I could care less. That's a crazy thing. Yeah. Like, I really didn't care. I thought it was kind of funny, and you know, I was just more mad about the game than anything. Same with my dad, and you know, it was just something that would never be forgotten. And I was like, all right, this couldn't have been a crazier start to my college career than this, and. Yeah, I mean, we ended up auctioning that jersey off at my parents' foundation for about $7,000.
Oh my God!
So went to charity. It was for a good cause. So
wow! So it all worked out. Yeah, good work, Schwartz.
Yeah, it worked out. Good work, Schwartz. And ever since then, I checked my jersey, see if it was spelled right, and you know, the jokes went on ever since then. Every game, mm-hmm. guys would be like, you know, his buddy's name spelled right. Check that. check it twice, and. Yeah. I mean, yeah, it was a very, very funny moment, and you know, so I think really everyone was kind of thought it was funny and just yeah. ironic, very ironic yeah. that name was spelled wrong.
Yeah, of all the players to ever play for your dad, it's like
right. I don't think like we've ever had a jersey spelled wrong in a game, and then the
like,
one
period, was, yeah,
like the coaches who's been there for 40 for 100 years. His son, it's crazy. Can't make it up.
I mean, one thing about Buddy is that if you guys don't know Buddy, if you guys haven't came in interaction with Buddy, Buddy's the nicest guy in the world. Nicest guy. You know what I mean? Like, he'll treat a manager with the most respect. You know what I mean? So, like, for him, I think anyone else would be pissed about it. You know what I mean? Yeah, Buddy was probably like, definitely. You know what I mean? It's just an E. It's just an E.
Yeah, just so laid back about it.
That's yeah. I mean, people. Like, yeah, people were texting me like, "Yo, like, how mad are you?" I'm like, "Dude, I thought it was funny. If anything, like, I really didn't. You know, I thought it was hilarious. But
yeah,
I definitely see how some people could be a little upset by it and mad, but. Yeah, I just, you know, I think I, when I saw Schwartz, how upset he was, I think they
just had it in stride.
Staff, like, watching him at halftime, making sure he wasn't going to do anything crazy. And, you know, he thought he was just going to quit or something. So we had people watching him and just telling him it was all good, I think, helped ease his mind a little.
So going into your sophomore year, but I think your sophomore year for me was the first time where I – watching that Villanova, it was like, all right, this guy isn't only a role player in college. This kid, like, he's a legit ACC level player. I think you averaged 15.5 points your sophomore year and really came onto the scene. When did you realize, like, during that summer? Because I mean, obviously, being hard workers, it's like, all right, like you think you're doing the right things, but when did you really realize in that summer or when that season started? Like, hey, like, I can score the ball at a high level in the ACC.
Yeah, man, that kind of just, you know, that took time too. I think that summer, I mean, you've worked out with GMAC too and how elite he is. And I think, you know, we kind of realized, like, I'm 6'6", and, you know, as a two guard, that's pretty, you know, pretty good, especially in the college level. You're not going to play many 6'6", 2 guards. A lot of times I'm playing 6'3", 6'2 guys. And, you know, I mean, I'm not going to be quicker, faster than anyone, but I can get to my spots. And I think really that summer we just worked on a lot of mid-post stuff, backing him down and, you know, going against him, just dummy defense, and going against Beery and, you know, little guards and just like work on different scoring out of there, using my pump fake, stuff like that. And I think also just, you know, the team needed me to step up that year. We had obviously Elijah Hughes, elite scorer, but we kind of needed a second option, that a guy that could score. And, you know, playing with Marek, who's so unselfish, playing with, you know, a guy like Joe who can really shoot and opens up space for me, that kind of helped. And just, you know, I realized that summer was going to be huge for me. So I think just, you know, we went at 7 a.m. every day that summer. It was a great summer, getting in the gym, lifting every day. You know, I think that was one of my best summers in terms of just working out every day, spending time in the gym, not having to worry about COVID or anything. So that was a great summer for me. And then, you know, start of the year was a little up and down. And then I think once, you know, conference played a couple games in, had a couple big games in a row, and that just got my confidence really going, coming off screens. Just, you know, my mid-range game really took another step. And I, you know, was just a spot-up guy my freshman year, and that was all I could do. Really, I couldn't dribble yet. My dad would tell me, don't dribble. And, you know, I agreed. One game I got it stolen from me, and, you know, after the game he said, never dribble again. And I was like, all right, we'll
I've
see.
I've heard that. Yeah. I've heard that before.
Yeah.
I've heard that before.
So I was like, all right, you know, we'll keep just shooting threes till I can dribble again. And, you know, that next year I had to take a step up, and, you know, he kind of told me that going into the season. So just, I think just working on getting stronger and getting my mid-post game was big for me, just utilizing my size.
Real quick, you mentioned your mid-post game. Is that something you, like, targeted specifically that year? Because that, like, turnaround in the lane is, like, the most frustrating thing I've ever had to guard. I'm, like, 6 foot. But, I mean, you still give, like, every single defender in the ACC, like, nightmares about
Patty.
You feel like you're Patty. In front of you. You feel like you're going to block it, and then all of a sudden it's through the bottom of the net. So, like, is that a specific thing that you and GMAC kind of identified, or was it just
something that developed over time?
Yeah, we definitely, I mean, we worked on it a lot that summer. I also think it just came naturally, almost, like,
right.
Just being 6'6", and having, you know, if I'm going against a guy like, even you, like Joe.
Yeah.
Small, Joe, no hate to Joe either.
Way too little.
Yeah.
Way too little, Patty.
Yeah. Like, you know, you guys are quicker that you're going to beat me to the spot, so I have to be able to spin off. And, you know, if I can just get into the lane a little and shoot over you guys, like, you know.
What always shocked me, too, is, like, knowing how you play, I was always banking on you blowing by me and dunking it. So then when you would pull up and shoot to the mid-range, I'd be like, wait, what's going on here?
Yeah, I love getting to the pull-up, and, you know, I'm not going to dunk on anyone or finish out, you know, lay anyone. So just, you know, just from being in practice and going against, you know, good defenders, and, like, you know, respect to you, you're definitely the best.
Yeah, there we
one
go.
One of the there's better defenders. Yeah. I give you a lot of credit.
Yeah, I know.
I do. Yeah. You definitely made me.
I appreciate it. I always appreciate it.
But I mean, we had fun battles, and, you know, just
I don't even know if they're pretty one sided. I don't know if I would call them battles, but I was always
you had your days. Yeah.
So, buddy, the season ends, obviously, in COVID. Sophomore year, you guys are playing your best basketball as a team. You guys beat Carolina by 30. You guys played a great game, and the season ends because of COVID. Talk about, in COVID, how you were able to get better and make that next jump into your junior year, being the primary scorer, the primary top guy in the scouting report. Tell us how you were able to make that jump, even though COVID happened.
Yeah, I mean, COVID was tough, obviously. You know us, we play our best basketball at the end of the year, time and time again. And, you know, we beat Carolina by 30. And, I mean, it was a dominant game. Everyone was saying they were going to win the ACC or make a run at it. And we just, you know, we kill them. And we're feeling good, honestly. You never know, we can make a run. But gets canceled. And, I mean, honestly, it was a positive way to end the year. You know, we were still a bubble team. We might not have made the tournament. So just to end it like that, you know, everyone was kind of in good spirits. And, You know, COVID was obviously tough, and I'm just thankful to have a, you know, having a half court, you know, in your house is the greatest blessing a basketball player could ever ask for. So, you know, I said I better, you know, be working out every day and be ready, because I don't know how long this is going to last, a month, 2 months, 3 months. But when it gets somewhat normal again and we can play again, hopefully have a season. That's what I was really banking on, was just working out every day. And, you know, that's when those one-on-ones went back with Jimmy, and we play every day. And, you know, the one person we were allowed to see was Eric Devendorf, and he would come over, and we would play one-on-one. We would work out for about an hour and then play one-on-one for an hour and lift after that. And just, you know, we had a lot of great battles, and just reminded me of old times. So, you know, in a time of craziness and just a lot of nothing going on, that was, you know, our peace and therapy to do that. And I think that really, you know, I give a lot of credit to those two for, you know, especially Devo, for just pushing us every day. And Devo can still hoop, and he would beat us and talk his shit. And if we would win a game, the next game he was going to win. And there's no doubt about that. But we had a lot of fun. And I think just doing that every day helped a lot keep me, you know, focused on basketball, keep me in playing shape. And then when we got back to workouts, just taking advantage of that. And yeah, it was definitely, you know, it's a lot harder when you have more attention and being the main guy. And, you know, I would text Elijah like, man, you know, I miss you here. Like, how did you make it look so easy? Because, you know, he's as good of a scorer I've ever seen and played with. And, you know, he just gave me little tips here and, you know, just told me to let the game come to me. And that helped a lot, and was able to make that jump and, you know, become even better as the year went on.
Speaking of Devo, I worked out with Devo a couple times, but the first time I worked out with him, I tell Patty this story all the time. We worked out for an hour and a half, and we worked on everything.
Everything, man.
There wasn't an aspect of the game we didn't work at. When I'm talking about mid post, full court layups, 30 minutes of ball handling, shooting on the move, shooting off of ball screens, like mid post moves. I'm saying hour and a half of everything. Just me and him in the gym. The first thing we started off was 10 full court layups.
Oh yeah, no, like I tell my friends, like, because I, you know, I would get off the bus in seventh grade, and I would have to do that for an hour. Like right off the bus, 3:30, I would eat a snack, and I would do that for an hour every day. And like, well, I mean, like tears came down my face some days. Like I was like, I don't know if I can keep doing this. I don't know if that this is all. Like, he will push you to limits that you know, you never knew you could get to. And I mean, it helped me so much. Like, I don't think I would have been able to play at Syracuse or got to the point I was without him. You know, this was before I was really working. I started working out with GMAC in sophomore, junior year of high school. But, you know, for 4 or 5 years, I was working out with Devo every day, you know, 300 days out of the year. And every weekday we would get it in, and we'd play one-on-one after, and he'd beat me 11-0 every game. And, you know, he really like, and I would be crying a little and he wouldn't care. And I'd be like, all right, this guy's a psycho. Like, he, you know, he's beating up on a second grader. And
that's like,
I have, yeah, big brother forever. He texts me after every game, before every game. You know, we've gotten so close, and I love Devo. You know, him and GMAC are like my big brothers. And, you know, yeah, I mean, I tell my friends, like, these workouts are, you know, you're going to work on everything. He's got the heavy ball now for ball handling. We'll do it. And, you know, he just loves basketball. That's what I love about him the most. Him and GMAC, like, they're as passionate about it as the person
obsessed
working
with out. It. Yeah.
They wanted to see me be better than almost than I wanted to see myself be. We had that same level of passion, and, you know, it made it fun. And, like, you know, I couldn't wait to work out with them every day.
Definitely.
It's gonna kill me some days, because, you know, they love it and they just want to see me be the best I could. So I give those two, you know, probably the most credit for where I've gotten, along with obviously Ryan Kabilis in the weight room working out with him since seventh grade. But you know, if you're gonna work out with Devo, be ready, because it's gonna be, you know, a little bit of everything, and you better be in shape, because, you know, he's not gonna let up. He's the best. He's one of one for sure.
Yeah, I mean, that's not surprising. Like, you see him playing the TBT like last year. He's still in phenomenal shape.
Unbelievable.
He's still in great shape. He's
crazy.
He played today. I mean, he would go and play pickup at Mello. You know, when I was in high school, and he was probably, you know, late 20s, and he was the best player on the court with, you know, some NBA guys on the court at the time, or guys that would play professional for a long time, and he was, you know, he's the best player on the court. He's just he's you know, he's unbelievable. He's a machine. Yeah.
So Bud, your junior year, you guys end up getting into the tournament, 11 seed, playing your best basketball towards the end of the year, lose a tough one to Virginia. What kind of mindset were you in going into, like, those two games, getting the Cuse back to the Sweet 16? I mean, you literally lit college basketball on fire, lit March Madness on fire. I mean, just talk about that week, talk about that time in your life, and just talk about, like, the mindset that you had during that time.
Yeah, man, that was a crazy, you know, that was a crazy stretch. Definitely probably the best basketball I think I ever played. Just, you know, everything was going for me. I was getting the rhythm right away, and it really started against Carolina two games before the end of the season. Played them, you know, I had about 27, 26. Played Clemson, had, you know, had 17, 20, but we won both those games and had a lot of momentum going. I was playing my best basketball, go to the ACC tournament, beat NC State by, you know, 15, 20, and they were a really good team at the time. They were playing their best basketball. I had another big game, and then we played Virginia.
But, hey, I got the game log here if you just want me to rattle them off.
Hey, rattle it off, Patty. Rattle it off. I want to hear it.
No, I'm going to start with Notre Dame because you played well in that game.
Oh, shoot. Yeah, yeah.
Oh, wait.
Yeah. That was a crazy.
Oh, no. Hold on. I'm looking at this year.
Adam, I'm sorry, man.
You Scram basketball guys. You can't trust those guys. We go to the ACC tournament, beat NC State, play really well in that game. And then Virginia, we lose on a buzzer beater by Reese Beekman, who didn't make a shot that whole game until the last shot. So, you know, I was living with that any day, but, you know, credit to him, tough shot. But, I mean, again, I think that was, up until that point, that was probably the best game of my career. I think I had 31, you know, helped late, had some big buckets late, went to the free throw line late, and just kind of helped get us, you know, to a chance to win that game. And against an elite team, they were the best team in the league that year, and probably would have won the ACC if – had not they got COVID and got disqualified from the ACC tournament. So I think we had a lot of confidence as a team then, like, you know, if we get in the tournament, it doesn't matter who we play. It always works out for Syracuse in that zone. And, you know, we got matched up with a team, San Diego State, who doesn't see the zone. They hadn't played us in 6-7 years, and that was on a cruise ship. So, you know, they didn't know what to do against the zone. If you watch that game, it was, you know, that was one of the few games I was like, they have no idea what they're doing. Like, there's a couple teams that you're playing, they don't know what they're doing. But they just passed it around and shot three.
Struggle.
Just struggled. And yeah. I think the biggest thing for me was in all those games, I started out 2-for-2, 3-for-3. In that game, I think I was 5-for-5 to start, and, you know, had an and-1 three. I think I had like 12 points at the first media. And I was just, you know, once those first couple of shots went on, the first shot, I was really nervous. It was a deep, tough three. And when I made that, confessed, I was like, all right, you know, let's get going now. And just felt like I couldn't miss a shot. And, you know, went into half up 10, 12, and had, you know, about 16 at half. And then, you know, second half hit my first three in the second half. Over, you know, one of their bigger guys, and then just kept going, made a couple more tough ones, and then, you know, made a stupid one at the end of the shot clock that was that's when I was like, all right, like, you know, this is the craziest. You know, I remember going back to my hotel like, geez, like, that did that really just happen? Like, I couldn't believe it. And just a great moment. I mean, just getting back to the tournament, helping us win, and then, you know, beat West Virginia in another game where I actually probably should have had a lot more than I did, because I remember I was 1-for-7 at halftime. I had, you know, I think I had 2 points, and I was getting a lot of good looks. And I was like, I told the guys at halftime, like, you know, I'm going to get going, guys. Like, I'm letting you down right now. Like, let's keep going. I think we were up like 4 or 5, but they were coming back because we were up 15 early. And then the second half came, and obviously they came back, took the lead, and was able to make a couple big shots down the stretch. Got confident, started talking a little, and I think it just kind of got everyone going a little and was able to close that
game. I'm a bucket.
Yeah. But you know, the next day we're in the team meal room, and my dad and Mark Few are sitting together, Ethan, and my dad goes, "Buddy, don't say that again. Don't
Buddy, come on, man."
You're sitting there like, yeah. "I liked it. Like, I liked it. Do it. Like, keep doing it." Yeah. And I was like, you know, appreciate it. But yeah, it was crazy. I mean, just after those two games. And
wait, real quick, can you tell the first take story real quick? I know we're kind of crunched for time here, but
no, we're good. That's actually a great story. Yeah. So yeah, the whole week's crazy. Melo sent me up, like, all these former Cuse guys, just, you know, talking to a bunch of guys. I mean, I was talking to Kevin Durant before that, after one of the games.
Wow.
Jesus.
On Instagram, wow. You know.
Just dropping that subtly, like, oh yeah, Clay, KD, whatever.
Yeah, Clay's my favorite player ever. So when I saw that, I was like, no way. And it was a crazy week. And then, you know, I'm getting breakfast one morning, and we're in the bubble, and it's like 8:56. And, you know, our media guy, because the night before he was talking to my dad about, you know, interviews and stuff. And I was just eating, right. Like, all right, I hope like I'm not have to do any of these. And then the next morning he tells me I'm eating. He's like, I had bedhead, like, crazy hair. I hadn't got a haircut in a while. I was just, you know, yeah. COVID and all that. And he goes, you know, you're gonna do the interview like that. And I'm like, what interview? And he's like, First Take, like Stephen A, 5 minutes. And I'm like,
yeah, have you ever heard of it?
Yeah. What are you talking about? Like, please, like, you're joking, right? And he's like, no, like, I told you. And I'm like, no, you never told me nothing, no text, nothing.
Pete Moore, man.
Run up to my room, like, put my head under the shower, shower of my life, probably under 15 seconds, get out, get back down. It's like 9:01. We're starting. I jump in the chair, still look a little crazy, but a little better. And yeah, talking with Stephen A and Max and, you know, Molly and my dad, it was pretty cool.
Yeah. That's awesome. I mean, you did a great job. I think I was watching that from my couch. You did a great job.
Oh, appreciate it, man. Yeah, those Zooms were fun, but yeah. It
was, did you consider going to the draft at all after that year? Because your name was obviously smoking hot.
Yeah.
Did you consider it?
You know, I really didn't. I mean, thinking about it, you know, it was probably the best year to go. I mean, after that run, but I just, you know, I was so set on coming back, and I always told myself, I mean, I never thought that would ever happen. Like, it really, the question started during the tournament. I was like, what? Like, I didn't, even up until that point, I was like, oh, wow, I guess there's a chance. But I never even thought about it for a second. And, like, people won't believe me, but I never really thought about it, playing in the NBA or anything. So I was so set on coming back when I knew Jimmy was coming. You know, trying to get a guy like you was one of the biggest things in the off season. And, you know, once I knew you guys were coming and what we had coming back, like, you know, I thought it was our best team, my best team potentially, you know, top, one of the better teams probably my freshman year, and that team would have been right up there. But I couldn't wait. And I think also it was a great group of guys. Like, it was a group I wanted to be around, hard workers, good guys. And I think it was, you know, even though it was a year that could have went a lot better, probably should have, we got some unlucky breaks, and you know, we were in every game. And, you know, I still think to this day, I'll put that team up with any of the three other Cuse teams I played with. And I mean, overall, I still had such a great experience with that team. And yeah, I definitely play some of those ending games, and, you know, Wake Forest, and a couple missed calls here and there, and some shots that didn't go our way and went the other team's way. And, you know, that will definitely haunt me for a while. But I think just the memories that I was able to make and the bonds, like, you know, this team I'm going to talk with as more than probably any of the other teams I've been a part of, and guys that I'll always be close with. So, you know, it was still a special group, and, you know, I wouldn't trade that group for anything.
Yeah, it's me and Patty talk about it all the time, just the group that we had, and, like, the games that we had, you know what I mean? It's just
so frustrating.
It's crazy, man. Like, you know, the year before that, we go to the Sweet 16, and we have a couple games, like, a lot of games go our way. I mean, Notre Dame, we're down 20. Bryant should have beat us at the last second. They missed two shots to win the game. You know, and it's just, that's how college basketball is. You know, a couple breaks go your way, and next thing you know, you're in the tournament and you win two games. It's a great year. And, you know, this year we could have won seven games probably that we lost.
At least, yeah.
There's probably one or two that we might have should have lost and we won, but maybe one or two. I can't even really think of, you know, Georgia Tech, DeVoe could have been a game winner, but there's really not. There's not, you know, there's five, six games right off the top of my head where we probably had, you know, by analytics, 90% chance to win with less than 5 minutes. And, you know, it didn't go our way. And it's, you know, that will always be tough to think about. But I mean, the biggest thing is that we all gave it everything we had. It was a group that didn't, you know, quit, and everyone worked hard. And, you know, you, Jimmy, I mean, Patty, even as a walk-on, showed up to work every day. And I, you know, I always respect that. And, you know, I'm never going to be, you know, upset about how it went, because I mean, I'll be upset about how it went, but I'll always, you know, have the most respect for that team, because we, you know, fought through it together and we tried to make it work every way possible.
And then, you know what I mean? It's just the luck of our season. You know what I mean? It's just, I thought we were playing our best basketball towards the end. We lost a couple of tough games to UNC, Miami. And I mean, Miami, I thought, was one of your best games of your college career. And, like, talk about the emotions before that game. They dropped a video, and I remember talking to you about this video, and honestly, I started getting a little emotional just watching the video, because of just the career, yeah, and the things that you did in your career when no one thought it was possible, right? Just talk about that moment. Talk about senior night, going out with Jimmy and your parents right there, and then putting on the performance that you did. I know we didn't – just another one of our games that year, but just talk about just that moment.
Oh, man, yeah, just – you know, I just, that moment, I mean, I think I was just, you know, a lot to be proud of, I think, and just more than anything, just thankful to have that experience. And, you know, I was so in the moment that I wasn't really thinking about it much. I wasn't even tearing up at all. I think, you know, now looking back on it, like, man, I miss it every day. I think about those 4 years every day. It was the greatest experience ever. Like, you know, I'm excited for what's next, but you know, I can say pretty confidently nothing will beat playing at Syracuse for my dad, with the guys I got to play with the coaches that I got that watch me grow up. Like, that's my life. So I think, you know, now looking back, I'll always be proud of that and be happy I got to play at Syracuse. And whatever I do from here on out, I want to accomplish a lot more. But, you know, I think I'll always be thankful for those 4 years. And, I mean, going into my freshman year, me and my dad talked about it. Am I, you know, exit interview, whatever you want to call it, just what it was going on next. You know, we were laughing because 4 years ago we were like, you were saying, you know, just come in, work hard, and you know, by your junior senior year you can maybe play, maybe you'll start your senior year and, you know, help us out, help us win games, but just work hard and we'll see what happens, and then get a job and go from there. And you know, and looking back on it, everything that I was able to do, and
yeah,
just, I mean, the greatest part of it was the teammates I was able to have, that, and the coach, that they made it easier for me, because there were a lot of tough moments and tough games, and everyone would, you know, a lot of people would blame me being the coach's son and this and that, and there's a lot of but my team, every year my teammates would be like, don't listen to them, just keep working hard, they always had my back. And yeah, I'll forever be grateful for that, because it could have easily went the other way. And yeah, I mean, just a lot of emotions now looking back on it. I'll remember it forever and be thankful for it. But, yeah, I mean, win or lose that game, it was obviously a heartbreaker. It meant a lot to just hold up that uniform, because for 15 years I saw my favorite players, seniors, walk out there and do that and do those things. And, you know, I never really thought I would be out there and have the career I was able to have. So, it was a special moment, something I'll remember forever, and I'll, you know, always cherish my time at Syracuse. It was the greatest ever.
The other, you're too humble to say this, but the other wrinkle of that game is that the listeners might not know, you and Alondis Williams from Wake Forest are battling for the scoring title for the last couple weeks of the ACC season. Wake Forest played Thursday or Friday, right? And he took the lead. And Buddy needed 29 points to win the scoring title and had 30 points, which was unbelievable.
Yeah, and it was actually crazy. Yeah. I didn't even know anything about it.
Yeah, G-Mac told me that on the bench. He was locked in on it.
That's awesome. Yeah, I love GMAC. I love GMAC for that. That's my guy. But yeah, I saw Alon just that week at the ACC tournament. He was just like, man, why do you have to do that? Yeah. But yeah, he's a great player. And yeah, it was pretty cool. It was kind of crazy how that worked out. And, you know, I was just hoping I'd scored or had a good senior game. But yeah, it worked out. And
another stat of Buddy is that he led the country in ISO buckets.
That's not bad for a slow white guy. It's not.
Yeah. Hey, Patty, you can't feel bad now. You can't feel bad.
No, I didn't feel bad to begin with, but yeah, it's an unguardable shot. It's three spins, go to the nail, shoot it right over your fingertips, and it goes in every time.
Whap.
Every time.
That was my favorite. I mean, that was my favorite year of practice too. Just the guys and
going to
you. Like I really enjoyed it.
I appreciate you saying that. Hey, I can also say it was my favorite year of practice that I had for basketball too. If I'm being honest. So.
My dad would come up to me and be like, you know, playing against Patty's going to really help you. You know, he's tough, he plays hard, and he's physical. I'm like, yeah, you know, you're right. He's actually.
Unbelievable. You guys always made it known to me too. You're very appreciative, so thank you for that. Yeah, so I mean, moving, like, obviously postseason, start preparing for the NBA draft. It's like, that's another thing that's like, oh shit, like this is kind of reality now. So I asked Swider this last weekend, obviously as a New York guy myself now, what was kind of the process in your thinking with Jimmy as far as choosing Roc Nation and then ultimately making the move to Manhattan and spending pre-draft here?
Yeah, that was the easiest decision for me, honestly. Thankfully, my agent Drew Gross went to Syracuse, was a manager, watched, you know, knew me since I was in eighth, ninth grade, probably younger, middle school. And I was with Roc Nation for NIL with Jack Overdyke, who also grew up, went to my high school. I knew really well, and kind of crazy how that worked. And, you know, right away we wanted to sign with them. And the biggest thing was just, you know, figuring out what the pre-draft details would be. My dad wanted me to stay in Syracuse a little longer and kind of work out there with the guys there. But, you know, I was ready to get out and start something new, start a new chapter. And they, you know, they obviously had pre-draft workouts in New York City. We all stayed in the same building where they have the Chris Brickley runs, that gym. So that was pretty cool. First couple of times there, like, you know, LeBron's been in here. The best player is Carmelo, all those.
Yeah, guys. It's the most popular gym on Instagram, like by far.
Yeah. So I was like, all right, this is a good start. And me and Jimmy lived together. That was a very fun experience.
You know, the place was unbelievable.
Yeah. Place 64th floor, one of the best views overlooking, you know, all of New York. We had 5-6 other guys there, Ron Harper Jr. at Rutgers, Will Richardson from Oregon, Justin Lewis from Marquette, Tyson Etienne from Wichita State. And, you know, we just got super close. We spent, you know, 3 months together. It was 4 workouts a day, start at 7, go till 3:30. And then you have nights to, you know, get food and just watch TV. We play poker, you know, every couple nights and have fun and, you know, take Jimmy's money. And he'd complain that he didn't get a good hand for 2 weeks. He couldn't get any good cards.
Sounds about right.
He would fold before the first ante bet. Like, you wouldn't even put one chip in. And we'd be like, really, Jimmy? And it's just, it was fun. My first time away from home, really, since, you know, the 1 year I did at prep school in New Hampshire, but it was my first real time away, and doing it with him made it, you know, fun and easy. And then traveling to 15, I think I did 14 pre-draft workouts. So I went to 14 different cities and worked out for different teams, and then went to the G League Combine, which went well. And, you know, I think when I did my Detroit workout, it was probably my 6th or 7th workout. It was my best workout. You know, I didn't, you know, I shot it unreal. Just shot really well. It was probably my best workout. And after that, I was like, you know, I want to end up here somehow, some way. I don't care if I get drafted, if it's whatever, this is where I want to go. And it felt right. And talking to Troy Weaver and coach Casey after with them too, you know, it felt right. And I really wanted to end up there, and it, thank goodness it worked out. And draft night comes that have, you know, my friends, you're up there, Patty, and
yeah,
Jimmy, and a lot of our friends growing up. It was crazy. I mean, you know, I remember that night Kai Feldman, one of my good friends, another great walk-on. You know, you two are 1A, 1B probably. And he was up to me and he's like, dude, 5 years ago, like, we would laugh if this is where we were at right now. Like,
it's crazy.
You know, he was asking me if I thought I was going to draft. I was like, you know, I don't know. And he just said that. And I was like, yeah, you're right. Like, this is kind of wild. And, you know, found the news, celebrated at a great time. Great night. And yeah, then right to summer league. But that pre-draft process was great for me. Just, you know, kind of how the season ended, everything, just having a reboot, refresh, and
right.
Starting this next journey. I think I needed it and just fell in love with the grind again. I mean, I was working out every day, all day. And, you know, I remembered how much I loved it. And it was just great to do that. And, you know, I really loved it. But now I'm out in Detroit and making the most of it and just, you know, seeing where the next journey will go. And yeah, I'm excited for it and, you know, having fun already.
No, that's awesome, man. So one of the things that me and you have talked about before is like, there's a lot of teams that may have a better record than us at, you know what I mean, for this year for Syracuse. But talk about how like the stage at Syracuse with guys, I tell people all the time, you know what I mean, not to throw any programs under the bus, but Providence has their best year in program history. They don't have any guys get a two-way or drafted. Villanova goes to the Final Four. They have one two-way, Colin Gillespie, who I love, you know what I mean? But me and you on draft night, the stage of Syracuse, I think, kind of prevailed for us. So kind of just talk about that, the dome, and everything that you think the ACC and Syracuse kind of brings.
Yeah, I mean, I wasn't surprised in the least that you got a two-way also. I mean, the way you ended the year, I mean, we both, I feel like, personally, we end the year always better. We had a great, you know, not even second half, after the first 5-6 games we got going and we kept working, we worked through it, and there's no surprise to that. So I wasn't surprised. I mean, I knew when you got to your workout, you were going to fry people and it was going to be a nightmare. I'm happy I wasn't at one of yours. Guarding a 6'9 shooter, elite shooter, is not fun, especially in one of those workouts. I couldn't imagine. So, you know, I knew, I wasn't surprised when, you know, Jimmy, I was asking Jimmy about, you was telling me you're having great workouts and doing second workouts. And I'm like, oh yeah, he's going to get a two way at least. So I wasn't surprised about that. And then just how you finished your season, shooting 40% from three. You know, the thing I loved about it too is, you know, my dad loves shooters and he loves guys that can put the ball in the basket, and that's what you do as well as anyone at 6'9". And I think the stage is great and that the stage is big, but you know, the best thing about playing for my dad is he lets guys do what they do best, and you know, he's gonna put you on the floor to do that. He's not gonna have you do something you can't do or put you in tougher situations. Like, he made it easy for me to score, and you know, same with you, he had you coming off screens and you know, whatever it was, having you opposite corner, just where you can get your shots off, get in the lane, get to your post game, and we were able to really thrive. And I think we both had great years, and regardless of the record, and that's, you know, playing at Syracuse too, and that, I think that helped also, obviously, that name and the pros that they've been able to produce. And you know, two elite shooters, it's hard to pass up on that. That's, you know, the NBA needs that now. They don't need guys that can dribble and do all that stuff. They need guys that can space the floor for you know, stars and big time players and make shots when they get the ball and get their chance. So I think, you know, it was hard not to pass up on two really good shooters. And, you know, I think we're going to keep surprising a lot of people. And
for sure.
I already know I'm rooting for you. And
always
fun.
100%.
I mean, one thing I always say about Coach Boeheim is that, like, the amount of confidence that he gives his players, right? And it's, yep, it was just unbelievable for me this year. You know what I mean? Just being a part of what, I mean, I say it all the time. Your dad saved my career, playing with you guys, just helped my career. I mean, I was crying when I gave my final speech with Syracuse, just how much it meant to me. But yeah, just wrap up the interview here. Like, what would you say your goals are for this year? You know what I mean? Me and you are in peculiar situations on two ways. You know what I mean? We have no idea kind of what to expect. But if you have some goals, what are some goals you have for this upcoming year with Detroit?
I mean, yeah, well, like, definitely, I think, I mean, my role switched again, you know, from going from having to do some things with the ball, do more things. I'm also now, you know, I'm kind of just running the floor, making shots, spacing the floor when I get it, you know, maybe pump fake, go to the rim, make a play. But, you know, they love getting up and down it here, you know, just from what I've seen, getting to the corners. They look for corner threes. And I think just becoming an elite shooter. I want to definitely shoot at least, you know, I want to shoot 40% from three. I think I have to do that to be able to stick and have a chance of playing on, you know, the Pistons for sure. Want to do that with the motor, the crews. As if I start out with them, whatever the case may be for G League, but shoot the ball extremely high rate for them. And, you know, don't really have any goals with the Pistons. I obviously want to, you know, make my way up and try to get on the roster and make my way up to help, because I think I can, just seeing, you know, just being an elite shooter. I think every team could use that, and I think the Pistons could use that. You know, we have some really good shooters. Isaiah Livers is a really good shooter and has helped me, but, you know, there's room definitely for shooting and always will be. So I think just working on my defense every day, getting better, and then just being in the best shape possible. I think that's the biggest thing. And, you know, it's a big change. You're on your own now. So I think staying motivated, staying focused is probably going to be the biggest thing. Just having that same motivation, you know, now I'm out of Syracuse. I always had that motivation there. I was playing for my dad, playing there. And now, you know, it's the next step and just finding that love again, finding out, you know, playing at the highest level. It's definitely, you know, going to be hard and going to be a lot of obstacles, but I think I've faced a good amount of adversity to be able to try to make it work. And hopefully I'll have a long career in the NBA. That's the goal. And, you know, probably no one thinks that, not many people, but it's nothing new. So I'm just going to take it day by day. That's really my biggest thing. And whatever happens, you know, I'm going to give it everything I have. So that's all that matters.
Yeah. Me and you both, bro. I mean, like we continue to do what we've done, you know what I mean? Obviously, you just keep on working hard, and the hardest workers always rise to the top, right, Patty?
Oh, 100%. I mean, you guys have done that. You've proved everyone wrong to this point, so, I mean, you're going to keep going. So.
Well, I just want to say thank you, bud. It's been an amazing podcast. Yep. Obviously, hearing your story again, I mean, even being as close as we were last year, just hearing your story again just motivates me and thanks for coming on, and obviously Patty, Jake, Adam, we all appreciate you coming on, and that was a great episode.
Yeah, but I think perfect inaugural guest. You got to come back on whenever we ask you to now. But maybe we could plan some sort of like joint Boeheim, do a little draft or something. It's tough because Jimmy's 10 hours.
It's tough, man. It's like 1 a.m. It's like 2 a.m. right now.
Yeah, it's insane.
He's probably up watching the Bills. I guarantee he's watching the Bills right now.
No, he is. He definitely is.
This will be the time. But we'll figure that out for sure.
Absolutely.
You guys, as always, Q's family for life. You already know.
Yep, sir.
We'll be in touch no matter what. And, yeah, I can't wait to watch you also, Cole and Patty. Keep updating us. We won't talk about your record last week, but from now on, let us know.
Yeah, definitely. No, I'll be doing weekly updates. So, yep.
Yes, sir. Appreciate you, bud.
Appreciate you guys.
Hey, that was obviously a great interview with Buddy. Really appreciate for him coming on. And we just have more in store for you guys coming up next week. Really, really great guest next week. We're really excited to introduce you to. And I just thought Buddy was a great, great first guest to have.
Yeah. No, I mean, like we said at the top, just felt like that was perfect. You know, in a lot of ways, didn't even really feel like an interview. It was just a conversation going back and forth. Hopefully he comes back on. I think we got to make the Boeheim episode happen with him and Jimmy.
Oh, definitely. I that might be a 4-hour conversation though.
Yeah, at least.
Might be a 4-hour conversation.
Do a draft or something, figure it out. But yeah, no, thanks again to Buddy. It's perfect. So,
like I said, this episode will be on all platforms, and we're excited to keep on going with the podcast.
We got a Spotify, Apple Music, all that. I sound like a broken record, but my producer's telling me to say follow us on all platforms, Instagram, Twitter, swidershow@gmail.com. Submit some questions. So, we're just looking forward to next week. Going to launch some guests just like we did this week, Swider. I feel like that worked out. Get the people going. Get them clamoring for the guests on social media, and then put up a graphic with who we're going to be talking to.
Definitely.
So.
Definitely. And last but not least, let's give a quick update on the men's league, the Hoop City.
I thought we could store this at the end. Yeah, the Hoop City men had a tough week. Not going to go into too much. I'm not an excuses guy, but we were missing our best player. My older brother was not there. He was not in attendance. He had a work event. So, we play again tomorrow night. We lost by like about 45, 50 points last week. Wasn't great. A lot of big guys. So, Yeah, I mean, move forward. Hopefully it goes a little bit better. I'm a little rusty, to be honest with you.
Definitely.
But
definitely.
Yeah.
Well, obviously, thank you guys for tuning in again. Really just excited to keep on going and excited for this next guest coming up.
Yep. Thank you, guys. See you next week.